When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Have you been using Mint to manage your finances? First, you probably know the bad news. Mint has shut down. But here's the good news. There is a better alternative. Monarch Money. That's right. Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. I have been using Monarch Money for over a year now, and it makes my weekly money dates so much easier and a lot less stressful. I tried all of the other personal finance apps, but they just didn't work for me. I love Monarch because I can see exactly where my money is going and track my goals all at the same time. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, your investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Monarch has a tool that also lets you easily import your data from Mint so you can keep all of your tags and categories. And unlike other personal finance apps, Monarch's simple, very intuitive design makes it so easy to set up, customize, and use. And one of the features I love most is Monarch has built-in features to collaborate with your partner, your family, or your financial advisor. You can invite them to your account at no extra cost. They get their own login, and you can have a joint view of your finances. Monarch is also the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up automatic rules for transactions. You can go to town with Monarch. Plus, they have ad-free privacy you can trust. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of the show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to The Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into The Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to The Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in The Daily Book Club.
The truth is, you know, the investing curve is like flat or nearly flat for a while. And then it goes up, right? Because it takes a lot of time and a lot of consistent contributions on the front end for that compounding to like really go. We talk about that as like priming the pump, right? Like it's just, it's going. You're pushing the pump handle, and then the water starts coming out.
Welcome back to Everyone's Talking Money. I am your host, Shauna, and if it's okay with you, we're going to be talking about money, but not the old school way. On this show, I like to explore the intersection of your emotions around money mixed with practical personal finance advice. I think that is the most perfect combination and the way that we should be talking about money. It's like the most amazing cupcake you've ever had in the world with the most amazing frosting you've ever had in the world put together into just pure cupcake magic. If you've been listening to this show for a while, you know that I love my food references. I love to cook. And I love to mash up money this way. And I feel like going forward, if you want to reach your money goals, you want to achieve the things that you want to in life, or you just want to feel less stress around money, this is the way we have to talk about money, with this combination of the emotions with the practical how-to. That brings us to this episode. Building your confidence as an investor. It is a journey, no matter where you are. There are early months and years of your investing journey, and they can feel very fruitless and like there is not a lot happening. Sometimes the line of growth that you see is so very small. And when you first start, every dollar feels just so precious. And the thought of losing it is downright scary. But as our guest, Anna Nyankante, president of Re-Envision Wealth and host of the Financial Powerhouse podcast, says, investing is truly the key to women's financial liberation. Every woman who wants to be at least financially stable or ideally abundant needs to invest. Now that's a bold statement, and I knew we needed to explore this with Anna. So in this episode, we are going to talk about what it takes to build confidence as an investor, how to move through the money mindset blockages that are keeping you stuck, keeping you in the same place with investing, keeping you from building your wealth, and why you don't need to know everything about investing to be a good investor. I'm going to let Anna take it from here. This is a good episode, my friend. Let's start talking. In a recent episode that I did, I talked with Jordan from the Earn and Invest podcast and Joe from the Stacking Benjamin show, and we were talking about common money beliefs that we all have. And the topic of investing came up, and I thought this was really interesting. Joe said, you know, investing is so strange. The advice is literally the opposite of advice about any other part in our life. You just invest and then do nothing, and it works out really well. So this made me wonder, you know, I was thinking about this for our conversation, is this what trips us up when it comes to investing? That actually it's pretty simple, but we try to make it complex. What do you think about that?
I think that's actually like nail on the head. I think there are so many areas in our life that are actually really simple and we make them really complex, right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like we think about weight loss. It's just we eat a little less than we burning calories every day and we lose weight. If we want to be in shape, we just have to show up consistently. We don't have to have some crazy program and that's it. And, you know, saving, it's just spending a little less than we make every month and we'll be able to save. And investing, it truly is like you have some work on the front end where you have to figure out what your asset allocation is and you have to figure out what your risk tolerance is and kind of, you know, where you're going to put your money and how much you're going to contribute. But once you have that set and you've done that work to do that, then there are so many studies that show that the people that just leave it alone and don't touch it anymore after that have the best performance in terms of their investment returns.
Thinking about that, there are a lot of people on social media, YouTube, kind of all the platforms that talk about investing. And it's really interesting for me and probably for yourself as a money expert to look at the comments and to look at people's perception of that kind of advice. And I think everybody's always searching for this magic bullet. What do I invest in to get rich? You know, what stocks do I pick? What's hot? What's not? All of those things. But we know, right? It's what you're saying. It's months, years of kind of consistency of continuing to invest in that this journey can feel fruitless or like nothing is actually happening. And so I think mentally, psychologically, we can get really discouraged in the process. Tell us a little bit about this. Like, how do we operate or deal with our brains and our thinking when we think something kind of great should be happening and it's just slowly happening over time?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I'm someone who's really good at delayed gratification. Like, I can do work today and know that I won't see the fruits of that for like months or years to come. Like, I'm good at it. But wow. Even still, I can be impatient, right? Like, that's the natural human tendency is, oh, I do this one thing and then I get a result. And it should be very clearly correlated. Investing doesn't work that way. And the truth is, you know, the investing curve is like flat or nearly flat for a while. And then it boop, goes up, right? Because it takes a lot of time and a lot of consistent contributions on the front end for that compounding to like really go. We talk about that as like priming the pump, right? Like it's going. You're pushing the pump handle. And then the water starts coming out. And what I would say is just maintaining that long-term perspective. I think this is really easy to do with like retirement accounts. If you're someone who's under the age of 50, you have a really long time to retirement, right? And so if you are just making a commitment to contribute whatever percentage of your salary or your income towards retirement and recognize that this is not money that you're going to need anytime soon, I think that's a really great way to train your brain that like, this is going to take time and it's supposed to take time, but I don't really need that money for now. I think where folks get into trouble, to your point with like the social media stuff, is that they typically don't have great financial habits or great perspective or great relationship with money. And then they want a quick fix for that like foundational issue that they have. And that's where we get into trouble and where we expose ourselves to, you know, potentially getting scammed or to lose a lot of money because we're gambling with money that we're not really supposed to be gambling with.
Tell me a little bit about habits, what good investing habits look like, because we talk about money habits, but I think for a lot of us, it still feels like, okay, but like, what's the secret? What are those? So when it comes to investing, what does that look like to have good habits?
Yeah. So I think it's, you know, doing a lot of that front work that I said and like being very intentional and very clear on what that is. That's one. The next I would say is just having a cadence that is not too frequent, but not too infrequent to just check in with your money. And this can typically be, I would say at most frequent, we'd say quarterly. I'd say probably twice a year is a great interval for most folks to check in on their portfolios and just say, okay, this is probably a good time to rebalance, right? So, you know, we talk about rebalancing is you set an allocation, say, okay, I want, you know, 70% stocks, 30% bonds in my portfolio. And so, you know, that allocation is going to change over time because those investments move in different ways. And so you might look up 6 months from now and it's going to be, you know, 75% stocks and 25% bonds. And so rebalancing is really just bringing that back to that target 70-30 allocation.
And how do we do that process?
Yeah. So some investment custodians just let you do that automatically. You can set it up to whereas, especially like retirement plans, 401ks, 403bs, they'll allow you to do that to whereas, you know, it will just automatically place the trades and do that. Some places will require you to do that manually. But I think timing up, revisiting and checking in with your investments with that is a really good chance to say, okay, is this looking like it's on track for what I need? Do I need to contribute a little bit more? Can I contribute a little bit more? Like my budget's feeling a little fluffy right now. Maybe I can be a little more aggressive in terms of my contributions. I think that's a great cadence because like looking at your investment accounts daily, looking at what the market is doing daily or weekly is really just an exercise in making yourself nuts. I'm a financial advisor. I manage portfolios for people for a living. I don't know what the market's doing every day. I don't know what the market's doing today. Haven't looked at it. Doesn't really matter right now because it's going to do its thing. It's really about having that front end work and making sure that the investments are doing what they're doing over time, what they're supposed to do over time that matters.
So that front work that you talk about, is this work that we can do by ourselves? Or, you know, is there, like, if somebody's listening and they're new to investing, what are some of the steps, maybe in a little bit of like a sequential order that they should take to get that sort of, you know, front load done?
Yeah, I love that question. So there's a lot of free resources that are available online, a lot of great calculators that are available online that can help you with this. There's like really three parts to, I would say, that front work. There's the deciding how much you're going to contribute and how much you can contribute. There's finding out the investment allocation that you're going to have. And then there's choosing the investments, right? The first one, you can go to like NerdWallet or Vanguard, Fidelity. They all have calculators that will tell you how much you can and should contribute towards retirement in order to meet your financial goals, right? And it can be as simple as I'm X years old, I make this amount a year, this is how much money I have put away for retirement or in my investments, and here's what I want to retire. Like, those are all easy numbers and things to kind of guesstimate for us. You put that in, it tells you, okay, you have to contribute X amount of dollars every month or every year in order to hit your goals. That's one. The second is figuring out your asset allocation, right? And Vanguard also, shout out to Vanguard, has really great tools for this. A lot of times your custodian for your retirement accounts is also going to have tools for this to help you figure out what your asset allocation should be. And that's really a function. Your asset allocation is basically the mix of types of investments.
Okay.
That's really a function of how risky you want to be and how long you have until you need that money, right? So like I said before, if you're someone who's 30 and you're not going to retire until you're 60, then you have a really long time until retirement. And so you typically are going to be a little bit more aggressively invested, but you might not feel super comfortable with that. And so you might want to be a little bit more conservative, and that's fine. But tools like your, as I said, your retirement plan, or Vanguard has calculators and stuff too that will tell you like, okay, based on what you're telling us, you should have an 80% stock, 20% bond allocation. That's what this looks like in a good year. In a good year, your investments are going to return this. In a bad year, it's going to go down this. Are you comfortable with that? And like really sitting with that is an important thing, because your behavior with your investments or your lack of fooling with them is what's going to determine how good your investment return is going to be, right? So that's the second part. And then the third is like the nitty gritty stuff that I think people get really hung up on, which is like choosing the actual investments.
Yes.
You know, that can get really complex and it's confusing, and there's like alphabet soup in terms of like all the different, like, is it an ETF? What's a mutual fund? Like, what am I doing here? I don't understand any of this, and I get it. But once again, like, there's a lot of tools with your individual custodians that will help you figure out like what are the investments that you're supposed to do. If you're finding yourself being really overwhelmed, like, pick a robo-advisor. I'd much rather have you people pay a little bit more. Let's say you pay 0.2% to the robo-advisor or 0.25% to the robo-advisor to get your money invested and stay invested, than sit on the sidelines and not ever invest because you're too overwhelmed and you can't make a decision.
I like that advice, because I think sometimes we get so bogged down in what should I pick that it causes a state of just freeze where you don't do anything. And so if you went with a robo-advisor, maybe you're paying slightly more, but you're actually getting that ball rolling. And then when you feel a little bit more comfortable with investing, then you can make a change. I think sometimes we think with investing, like, once we pick something, we're stuck. We're locked in there. Another thing you brought up that I want to talk about a little bit is this belief around investing that losing money is the worst thing that can happen to you. You know, a lot of people listening to this episode who are maybe 30 years old or younger have probably seen a lot of up years with the stock market. I'm in my 40s and I've seen a lot of up and a lot of down years. And, you know, if we kind of zoom out and we look at the 30-year historical average of the stock market, somewhere around a 10% return on average, which a lot of people would love that. But if we zoom in to some of the years where there's been a lot of decline and a lot of turmoil in the market, it can look really scary. So, Anna, how do we balance our desire to invest with these sometimes really deep fears of losing money? Maybe we saw something that happened to our parents or grandparents or our siblings, And we just do not want that to happen to us.
Yeah, it's really hard. I think it's very hard to see the money that you have diligently put aside for yourself go away instantly, right? Like it could just be one day where the market is down 5%. And we've seen things like that. I feel really fortunate that I started in this career in 2009, which is probably not a time
the worst time. Folks,
yeah, like just there's perspective, right? but you know, I think my biggest recommendation to folks who are feeling apprehensive about the market being down is one, that we need to make sure that we are not putting too much of our capital at risk, right? So, you know, if you have no emergency fund, if you have no, you don't have your debt paid off, if you don't have a good handle on your cash flow on a monthly basis, putting money at risk and seeing that money down is going to feel a lot more like you're going to be eaten by a tiger than if, you know, you have all of your kind of risk management buckets handled and you're investing for your future. That's one. The second I would say is, once again, maintain that long-term perspective. And there are so many charts you can see online to find like, okay, if we look at this super small snapshot, like this looks terrifying and scary. But if we look at 10, 15, 20 year time horizons in the market, that down, even if it is 10, 15, 20% down, really is just a blip. And then the market rallies after that. That's two. The third thing I just say too is investing is really something that folks have to do. Nowadays, folks don't have pensions. We don't have, we don't have that kind of guaranteed income. And so we have to save and invest for ourselves in whatever way that means in order to provide for our future financial stability. And so the down times are just cost of admission for having that future financial security that we all want. It's just par for the course. You're not going to get outsized returns without having some risk, right? Like risks and returns go together. And so it's just reminding yourself that it's par for the course. Just like when you work out and you're sore, like that's just par for the course. You have to do that. It's really not fun to feel like you can't get out of bed in the morning, but you have to do it in order to gain strength, and it's the same for investing.
Life does not happen biweekly, so why should your payday? The money you earn can be in your hands today with Earnin. Earnin, it's an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you can access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Listen, the money you get from Earnin, it could do a lot of things. Maybe you spend it on a gift for someone special in your life, or in my case, an unexpected and very expensive trip to the vet for my pup Winnie. Or maybe you use the money towards your upcoming rent payment. There are lots of ways the Earnin money could go to use. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability, security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin, T-A-L-K-I-N, money, under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin Money under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless, 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like $1 million wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/ETM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ETM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ETM. Want to know the number one money question I'm asked? It's how to get started investing without being overwhelmed. So if you're asking yourself the same question, then you have to check out the Investing for Beginners podcast. The hosts, Dave and Andrew, they break down investment terms and strategies in a way you can finally understand. I love that they're making investing accessible, and they have an entire podcast dedicated to helping you invest better. Even if you're not ready to start investing, they explain the stock market and financial updates so you can really understand what is being said on the news. If you're ready to learn more about investing, I'd recommend you start with two of my favorite episodes. Listener Q&A, how do you start investing with $1,000, where they explain how you get started right away. And Back to Basics of Building Your Portfolio, where they explain how to build a portfolio from scratch. The Investing for Beginners podcast is a great way to start expanding your relationship with money. Find Investing for Beginners podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, Anna, it's time to play Your Relationship with Money Is game. So first question, if you were to describe your relationship to money as a cartoon character, who would it be?
Oh, I would say it's probably Sleeping Beauty, because I put it away and I let it sleep and it's beautiful and it does its own thing.
I love that answer. All right. What is one money mistake you wish you could get a do-over for?
Ooh, I would say I had a lot of shame around my student loan debt when I first got out of college. And I spent a ton of time and energy and money, like just chucking money at the student loans. And I could have just invested more of that and I would be in a better financial position, or at least have more in my investment accounts now if I hadn't done that.
I like that answer, because I think a lot of people grapple with that question of, should I pay off my student loans or should I invest? And so I think that's, wow, that's like giving us some good vibes of like, hey, maybe we could look over here at investing and maybe not worry so much about the student loans. They'll get paid off.
They will.
All right. Next question. What was your last guilty money splurge?
Okay. I can totally say I love like jewelry, and I just went and got some piercings. You can see them here. I spent a lot of money on the jewelry, but it just brings me so much joy. I look at my ears every day and I'm just like loving it. My husband thinks it's nuts. He's like, you spent how much at that store? Yeah, I have my financial basis covered. So, you know,
you're like, leave me alone. Last question. What is your biggest money fear?
My biggest money fear is like not having my financial act together, and that's causing a lot of financial stress for my kids. You know, I spent a lot of time like watching my mom be really financially stressed, like working multiple jobs and, you know, finding coins in the car to like pay for things. And I just never want my kids to have that experience. I think it caused me so much stress and anxiety and made me feel as though I could not, you know, ask for things, or I couldn't expect more. And that's the last thing I want. So like my biggest fear would be my kids kind of absorbing that secondhand.
From Foreign Policy, I'm Rena Ninen, the host of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women. Over the past few years, we've looked at how women around the world are changing societal norms to increase their economic power. This season, we're focusing completely on girls, how they're pushing for a brighter, more powerful future, and what the rest of us can do to set them up for success. Join us for stories about girl power, young women who are fighting for change, to give themselves a chance to live a life of their own choosing. That's season 6 of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Karina Bemisdurfer, host of Morning Cup of Murder, your daily true crime podcast. Yes, you heard me right, daily true crime. Every day, Morning Cup of Murder tells you a straightforward, short-form story about murder, true crime, cold cases, disappearances, serial killers, cults, and more. And I do that all in under 15 minutes. With over 3 years of stories and over 20 million downloads, the Morning Cup of Murder podcast has become a staple of so many people's daily routines. So why not add it to yours? Stream Morning Cup of Murder everywhere you listen to podcasts, and remember, stay safe.
Talking about money is hard. You know this already. All over the world, people are taught to never talk about money, politics, sex, or religion in polite company. On 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meeting from executive producers Chip and Joanna Gaines, host and financial conversationalist Carl Richards will remove money from that list by having frank, funny, and often difficult conversations about money, the kind we're all told not to have, with guests from all walks of life. In each episode, Carl will invite a new guest to answer the question, "What does money mean to you?" Their answers will reveal much more than their attitudes about money, spanning revelations about identity, community, faith, family, and the true meaning of wealth. Tune in to hear deep conversations about money and the meaning it holds in our lives. You can find 50 Fires on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'm a huge dessert fan. If anybody's listening to this show, they've heard me talk about numerous dessert food references. And so when you talk about it being par for the course, I think about it like, you know, I love cupcakes, and sometimes I'm going to go places and the cupcake's not going to be that good, right? But I'm probably going to eat it anyway because it's a cupcake and it's like really hard for me to pass up. And so I think of it investing that same way, right? Sometimes you're going to get a cupcake that is not very tasty, but it's just part of the overall cupcake journey, right? There's going to be many great cupcakes along the way. So if anybody listening is as much of a food fan as I am, hopefully you'll love that reference. You are incredibly passionate about helping women in particular learn how to invest and start building wealth. And I think this is gold. You say that investing is truly the key to women's financial liberation. It's a really strong statement. Tell me more about this.
Yeah. I think that, you know, women have a ton of pressure on themselves in terms of their time and their energy. I'm a mother. I know that time is super precious. And so, you know, there's a lot of narratives around like start a side hustle and, you know, invest in rental real estate and get an Airbnb or do all of these other things that I think can be viable. But when you have precious little time and energy that you have to focus on these other things, it's asking a lot. I think, though, that investing is a low barrier to entry that is going to buy your future financial health. And it's not something that you have to spend time on. It's doing its thing when you're not thinking about it. It's doing its thing while you're, you know, putting your kid down for a nap. It's doing its thing when you are, you know, on vacation. Like, it's continuing to work for you in a way that serves your needs of not having to spend a ton of time on it. I think that women also, you know, we know about the gender wage gap. You know, if you are a woman, you earn 83 cents of for every dollar a white man makes. If you're a woman of color, it's usually much less than that. And so, you know, if you think about trying to make up for that gap, there's lots of ways you can do that. You ask for the raise, you get higher value skills, you switch jobs, you know, so on and so forth, right? Like, you do all of those things to try and get yourself to a better place. But one of the ways that we can catch up is by investing some of that money. And it doesn't have to be a ton of money every month. Like, it could be $50, $100, $200 every month. And that money adds up over time if you're consistent and you keep putting up with it. And that allows you to catch up with the fellas and like what they're able to do. And I think, you know, more women having financial independence, having assets, having wealth for themselves allows them to make more decisions that are aligned with what they really want versus like their money being dictated by their financial resources or lack thereof.
You also are a Puerto Rican Gambian American who you spent your childhood, you said, watching some really strong women around you live lives dictated by their bank account balances. And I feel like that is something that a lot of us share a version of that story. I know I talk often of a time when I was working with clients as a CFP, and I myself hated to look at my ATM receipts. I would go to the bank and, you know, they'd come out of the machine when you used to do that. And I would make origami out of them and shove them in my wallet because there was sort of this fear around money. And, you know, I can really relate to this idea of being dictated by your bank account balance. How did your money story kind of growing up the way you did, seeing these women, how did that impact your relationship with money and also your desire to become a financial advisor?
Yeah. So financial advising was not at all a career that I knew anything about, just coming from the type of background that I have. Investing was never a conversation. You know, folks' financial plan was, can I make it to the end of the month? Maybe I could think about buying a house like that. But that was really just like the pinnacle of achievement. You know, for me, I come from a family that, you know, is like very, I'd say, modest background. You know, my mom grew up very poor. My grandmother was a single mother. Like my grandfather died literally the week that my mom was born. And so there was a lot of struggle, multi-generational, intergenerational struggle in my family. And I think that really imparted on me the importance of having money and having financial independence. You know, there was also a lot of kind of anecdotal domestic violence, abuse kind of conversations that would happen to me of people in my family. And so for me, it just drove home that I needed to be financially well off so that I would not experience and have to live through a lot of these things and that I would not pass that on to my own kids. I ended up just kind of falling into wealth management. And for me, you know, that was really an eye opener where I realized that there were all of these people having these conversations that like absolutely nobody in my family was ever having these conversations. It was just very much, you know, day to day. There was no long-term planning or thinking about finances. And that's, you know, that's due to a lot of different reasons, but it really woke me up and drove me to want to learn as much as I could about finances, about investing, about retirement planning, and just at the very least to feel confident and comfortable in my own financial life, but also to think about, you know, helping other people who come from a similar background to me too.
Because money is super emotional, how can we as women work through these really sticky and sometimes terrifying emotions that we carry from money stories, you know, from ancestors and generations before us of women who have really struggled to have equal rights around money? I think that's present in all of us women, whether we recognize it or not. How do we work through those emotions and maybe even like yourself change the money story, change the future generation story going forward?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite like exercises to walk through with clients. I tell them to like just take a piece of paper or a journal and to, from their earliest memory of money to current time, write down every like money memory that they have. And this takes time and it can be really emotional, right? But just to write those down. So, you know, it could be something as small as when I was 3, I remember going to the store with my mom and her credit card got declined and we had to leave the food there. Or, you know, just going through what all of those different memories are. And then from there, once you kind of find those, like highlight the ones that really pop out at you, looking at those and saying, okay, what's the lesson that I took from that? Or what's the meaning that I took from that? What did I make that moment mean? And how do I see my current behaviors reflected in that? Like, what's the thread that combines those two? And a lot of times what happens is folks will say, like, I realize that I have this behavior, this habit around money that I didn't even realize had to do with that thing that happened when I was 16. And once the awareness I find is the first step towards breaking that negative cycle. And it's really what will help folks start to unravel it, even if it takes time. And typically what I'll do with them is, like, once we find out what that pattern is or what that behavior is, then we'll try to set up some financial systems or some boundaries that will work to overcome that or work to counteract that as well.
I like that. I do that exercise a lot with people as well. I call it a money timeline. And I think what's great about it is helping you write down, get out of your head those impactful moments, but then see it visually is so great. Because like you're saying, you can start putting pieces together, right? You're putting your puzzle together in a way. And it's like, oh, you start to become the almost like the detective of your money. Oh, okay. Now I understand why I do or don't do certain things. And I think that that's the piece of money we don't talk about often, is this unconscious gunk that goes on that just sort of is like this operating system in our brains and our bodies. And we do certain things or don't do certain things around money. And we think, why am I doing that? And we just keep repeating these patterns. So I love talking about this, especially in terms of investing, because I think there are a lot of money mindset blockages that we have, whether we're conscious of them or not. And they kind of paralyze us when it comes to investing. I'm wondering, you know, from all the women that you've worked with, all the clients that you've had, are there any common money mindset blockages that you see people have just over and over again?
Yeah. I think one is like folks feeling like they're not good with money because of some past money mistake they have made or some sort of traumatic experience that had to do with their own decision making. And so there's a lack of trust in self. And that kind of brings itself forward, even if it's not at all related. Like it could have been, oh, I ran up credit card debt in college. And so I can't be trusted with money. Like that's the story that they're putting in their head or that's living in their head. And so then they're reticent to make investing decisions or they're reticent to like trust themselves to make good decisions with investing because they have this idea. That's one. I think another is, you know, there's an identity thing with women I find where, you know, we are not socialized to identify ourselves a lot of times as breadwinners, as people yes. who make investing decisions, who make financial decisions. And so a lot of times there's a mental block with I'm not the type of person who invests. I'm not the type of person who is like really focused on money. I'm not the type of person who's really like analytical. Like there's all of this identity stuff that comes up that can be really detrimental to our long-term financial health if we don't address it.
All right. I want to go back a little bit to the alphabet soup that you talked about and talk about some foundations around investing. For those of us listening who don't know, can you walk us through what is the difference between an index fund? We hear that term a lot. An ETF, we hear that term a lot, and just, you know, picking a stock that we like. Can you walk us through like some of those differences?
So I'll start with the last one. A stock is really just you buying a piece of a company. So I can say when I'm buying one share of Apple, I'm buying one small piece, however many shares there are of Apple out in the world. I'm buying one small piece of Apple. And so as Apple continues to grow as a company, as Apple continues to increase in value, the value of my one share is going to go up, right? That's the simplest thing. With buying single stocks, there's risk that, you know, that company might not do well. And so, you know, it's a, imagine you're, we call putting all our eggs in one basket. Like if you just own a portfolio just of Apple, you are just putting all of your eggs in the Apple basket. And so if Apple doesn't do well, then your money is not doing well. Or if there's a lot of fluctuations just with Apple, like it's going to be all over the place, even if it is long-term going to do well. That's that. Index funds are one of, I think, the most useful investment tools that folks have. So, you know, there are things called indices that are created by these larger companies where they will set some parameters for like the types of companies that they're going to include. So the S&P 500 is an index, and that is the 500 biggest companies in the US, right? And so when you buy an index fund, you're essentially buying small pieces of those 500 companies, right? And so when we think about diversification or not putting all your eggs in one basket, right? Like that's a great way to get exposure to Apple and to get exposure to Microsoft and to get exposure to Adobe and all of these bigger companies that are ostensibly doing well without having a ton of risk in just investing in one thing, right?
Exactly right.
They're typically lower costs too, right? So your index funds are probably going to cost you pretty low. And when we think about investment fees, like that eats up a lot of the return that you could potentially have. And so index funds are usually a great way to gain exposure to the broad market at a pretty low cost. And index funds can be ETFs. I'm not going to get into like the trading details. That's really the biggest difference. They can be like mutual funds. That's also, I'm not going to get into that, but it's really just you buying a basket of a basket of investments or, an index, a particular index funds. And there's lots of different indices out there, some for international, some for domestic stocks, some for bonds. Like they come in a wide variety.
We know the power of investing is compounding, right? This magical thing where you talked about it starts out slow, and then somewhere down the line, it just is kind of hopefully somewhat of an upward slope and our money really starts growing. What if we're late to the investing game? What if we're in our 30s or our 40s and we haven't started investing yet? How do we not freak out about being too late, or maybe have, you know, lost many years? Is it really just a function of, okay, we're just going to have to contribute more money to get to the same place that maybe others did when they started earlier?
Oh, yes. I think there's it's better late than never. You know, they talk about like the best time to plant a tree is today. The second best time is tomorrow, right? Or was it yesterday and today? I don't remember. But anyway.
Whatever. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking
about. It's a good time to plant a tree.
Exactly. Just plant the tree. but I think, you know, recognizing and giving yourself some grace that you made the best decisions that you could with the information that you had based on whatever your circumstances are. And also recognizing that now that you know this is something you should be focusing on, that you have to continue to be intentional about it. I think, you know, there's lots of, as I mentioned, there's lots of online retirement calculators that are great that can help you figure out what you have to contribute in order to get there, to get to that retirement goal that you have. Focusing on taking whatever action you can right now, even if it's not, so let's say that retirement calculator tells you you have to contribute $2,000 a month in order to get to your retirement goal. That might be more than you feel you have available to do so, and that's fine. Not getting discouraged and saying, oh, because I can't do the 2000, I'm not going to do anything, or I'm going to ignore it, is not the solution. The solution is to say, all right, I can't do 2000, but I can't do like 900. And that 900 is better than nothing. And maybe making a commitment to, okay, I can't do that 2000, I can do 900. I'm going to figure out how I can increase my income, how I can cut expenses, how I can move things around in my budget in order to get to that amount that I have to. That is also great. I think, you know, if you're just starting in your 30s, that's not too late. Like, lifespans are ever increasing. Even if you're in your 40s, it's not too late either. It's really about, you just have to lean into it. You put your back into it, as I always say.
Well, on this show, I love to leave everyone with one tip or idea that you think we should be talking about after we hear this conversation. So in terms of investing, what is the one thing you want us to take away from this conversation today?
I'm not big on absolutes with finances, but the one thing I will always tell folks, like that is an absolute for me, is to always be investing for retirement. You know, life goes by really quickly. Time flies really quickly. And if you are not being intentional about putting aside money for retirement, like the time is going to pass and you're going to wish you had started sooner. So just get started whenever you can. And just make it a non-negotiable with yourself. You will definitely thank me later.
Hearing about Anna's mission to help women of all shades rewrite their money stories had a really lasting impression on me. I think about all the ways that I've let my money mindset blocks get in the way of investing the way I truly should have. And I know that in my family, I didn't have any examples of women who invested and who truly built wealth. Luckily, we have examples like Anna and so many other women who have been guests on the show to lead the way when it comes to investing. And let's be real, Anna's statement that investing is truly the key to women's financial liberation, okay, that needs to be on a t-shirt ASAP. You can learn more about Anna at reenvisionwealth.com. I will have that link in the show notes, as well as a link to all of our wonderful, amazing episode sponsors who help bring this show to life every single week. I will see you back here in a few days, my friend, for a brand new episode.